Syrian Cultural Heritage. I'm Clarissa Levy, an art lawyer and heritage advisor with BHL Art Group.
And I'm Richard Harwood, I'm a barrister at 39 Essex Chambers.
And we're joined today by Anwar Darkazali, who is managing partner of Field Intelligence, a private intelligence and investigations firm. Anwar, you started life as a lawyer before a 20-year career working in the Middle East and Africa, mostly in the United Nations Department of Political Affairs. For the last 5 years, you've worked in the private intelligence investigations sector, and you've undertaken a number of interesting projects, including an investigation into the looting and smuggling of cultural artifacts out of Syria. And that's what we're here to talk about today. So if I can start by asking you, what brought you into the field of investigations into cultural heritage at risk?
Good afternoon, Clarissa. Well, I'm half Syrian and half English, so I grew up, like lots of people, a long time ago on a Sunday afternoon watching the Antiques Roadshow, but with a bit more of the kind of focus on the news at the same time. So we've always had an eye for those people who are out and about in car boot sales, discovering extravagant, exotic things from far-flung places. And having traveled fairly extensively around the Mediterranean, I was always exposed to history, literally poking out of the sand. I was a university undergraduate studying Arabic in wonderful Egypt for a language year out, and remember going swimming with some friends and one of the friends' fathers, who swam a bit further out than the rest of us and came back with a perfectly intact amphora off the coast of Al Alamein about 30 years ago now. And I'm sorry to say, but like lots of people, rather than declaring it, he took it and stuck it in his garden. And some people might say, fair enough, finders keepers type of thing, one more amphora, who really cares? I think we had a bit of a philosophical discussion at the time. What happened to that amphora? The dad knew what it was. It would be in the garden, presumably for a while, but then he gets old, the gardener comes, someone else in the family thinks it's just a new bit of junk that's been bought at a garden shop. And that perfect amphora, rather than being in a school or somewhere, it doesn't need to be in a museum where it might be preserved and treasured, just sort of gets thrown out or turned into a plant pot, and the roots eventually crack the thing and it's destroyed. So bits of culture, artifacts, I think, have been around in my life for quite some time. If I can tell you one more story, perhaps from that same year in Egypt, we were out in the White Desert, which is in the southwest of the country, towards the border with Libya, in a far-flung oasis called Farafra. And it was an ancient site, which has been lived in for thousands of years, these desert oases. And there were adventurers who had come with chainsaws and explosives and 4x4s to grave rob. And they found these sites, and they would cut through them and blow up. And there was obviously no effort to preserve the sites at all. They just wanted what was immediately sellable, and to take it. And I remember the local police being informed of this group of bandits and their 4x4. And so he did the best that he could to try and pursue them. He commandeered a tractor, and he got on the tractor with his Lee Enfield Second World War rifle, and he tried to chase after these 4x4s in his tractor. So I think the fight, that innately British sense of justice, I think the fight was always an unfair one between people trying to preserve their unique cultural history and those trying to dig it up and flog it for a fast buck.
And I'm very interested in your sort of angle, really, because you don't approach this whole area as an antiquities expert, but from an intelligence perspective, and your job is obviously to gather on-the-ground experience. And I wonder how you go about that. How do you approach your work?
There are two types of intelligence, essentially. You've got open source work, which is going through everything which is publicly available, a sort of glorified Google, but with access to far more databases. And AI is now making great progress into this type of desktop research, as it's sometimes known. And then you've got human source intelligence, which is what we do at Field Intelligence, which is where we have a network of people around the world by every sector pretty much and every jurisdiction who have their own networks of people. And if you put a question to us, what is this business like? Who is this individual? What's really happening? What really happened in this situation? We will go to our network and we will be able to speak one step removed from people with first-hand information about a particular individual, entity or situation. And these transcripts form the raw material for our reports. So it's kind of a continuation of the theme of truth to power. and obviously an allusion on the idea of being in the field and getting the information direct rather than from a sort of a third party or from perhaps an online source which might have become corrupted along the way.
And have you ever been involved in investigations specifically in the field of cultural heritage and looting and smuggling?
I'm sorry to say that I have. I mean, I've had first-hand experience of it. When I was working in Beirut a long time ago, there was a Western diplomat who showed me around his garden, and he had bought what he called, with no irony, a garden ornament, which was a huge slab from a Roman mausoleum. This was during the civil war in Syria. And his problem was that he couldn't export it because the Lebanese customs officials had rightly said to him, what is the provenance of this Roman-looking slab that you're describing as a garden ornament? And he literally had a receipt, like one of those things that you might get from a newsagent's shop with a sort of carbon paper, to say that he'd paid $150 for this slab of history. And it was new. And on the basis of this, he was trying to export a 250-kilo stone out of the country. And I'm happy to say that the Lebanese stopped it. So at that stage, I started to look a bit further into what was going on. The civil war in Syria was at its absolute height, and looting was going on all over the country. Some of it was informal, disorganized, and some of it was highly systematized by Hezbollah and other criminal gangs, transnational criminal organizations, including ISIS, who were making huge amounts of revenue. So, I mean, there was one particular shop in Beirut which sold these magnificent 18th and 19th century wooden inlaid tables and chests of drawers with these wonderful mirrors on them, starting from a few thousand up to quite literally over $100,000 worth of furniture. These unique examples, which prior to the war, there had been very few available in the market, and suddenly there was a steady supply of them. So obviously they were coming from somewhere. So at that stage, we started to look informally, because we weren't mandated to be doing this, but informally into these networks and to what was going on the ground. And it's a very grim picture. Who is it that is actively looting and stealing the nation's heritage? And I think the answer is it's lots and lots of different types of groups. I've just talked about transnational organized crime groups, but at the same time, there are lots of people who, with no alternatives, no sources of money, no funds to buy food, shelter, whatever they need, would quite simply get into a pit, maybe something that's already been half excavated, and try their luck to see what they can find and then flog.
It sounds as if the looted antiquities and arisings that have been coming from Syria have been a combination of items extracted during the civil war from archaeological sites and also stuff that's basically just stolen from just where the furniture turns up and so on, stolen from private properties, from state institutions and the like. Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It is theft from museums and private homes. And if you look at the satellite pictures, which are all over the internet, you can see how pretty much as soon as the civil war, the revolution started, sites which used to be loosely guarded, and I think it's worth saying there was a huge trade, looting and theft under the Assad regime of cultural heritage, but sites which were sort of nominally guarded against non-official looters suddenly were free-for-alls. And you can see these anthills all over sites where suddenly people have gone in to try and dig it out. The problem, of course, with where sites have been looted rather than artifacts being stolen from museums or from private collections is no one knows that those items exist. And so particularly where you have high value or particularly rare items, it's very hard to track them down because they've never been catalogued. They've never entered the formal system. And therefore, trying to recover those items that theoretically don't exist because they've never been recorded is even harder.
How are those items being described in the market as far as you can tell? Are they being passed off as new things rather than antiquities or property of a lady or something like that?
There are lots of ways that people do it. Sometimes things are sent and recorded as being from India. Their provenance is completely constructed. A lot of material goes out of Syria to neighboring countries and then enters East or Central Europe, where its provenance starts to be created from scratch. Let's not beat around the bush here. Before it can then be sold in the kind of the bigger serious markets of London and New York. But people massively undervalue, they might, back to my amphora, it's just a common or garden amphora, there are thousands of them, it's worth $20 or whatever someone is stupid enough to pay for it. And so disguising the head of a statue, a rare piece of glass, as just being of lower value, because there aren't that many experts who'll actually be able to go through a market and say, no, by the nature of this glass, by the nature of this piece of ceramic, it is from a particular area. It is of a greater rarity, therefore a greater value. And when I talk about a greater value, I mean in cultural terms to start with. I think one of the great sadnesses about the cultural artifact market is that so much of what comes out of the ground is valued quite literally at its market value, not at its rareness, uniqueness, or our complete inability, obviously, to create such a thing again. And so if it's a gold coin, take it nice and simple, it might be literally valued at its weight in gold rather than the fact that it's got Cleopatra on it, for example.
Yeah, irreplaceable and historically important. Absolutely. Well, valuation is a fascinating topic and a huge one. I suppose you've conducted investigations into smuggling then and looting, and you've seen a bit about what's going on. Have you ever noticed any changes happening as a result of your work? What's changed?
I think there are some positive changes. Obviously, great news that the civil war in Syria is over, or certainly over. I don't want to be pessimistic, but the civil war in Syria is over. That is one positive element, and I think that enables people to start prioritizing what's important. There will need to be jobs created for a lot of people as part of the reconstruction and bringing the country back together again, and actually preserving the country's past is a fantastic way of bringing people back together. Syria has always been a very rich, pluralistic society, and even through the darkest days of the revolution, we saw some extraordinary acts of bravery, Muslims going out of their way, risking their lives to protect ancient churches. The extraordinary curator, the keeper of the Palmyra site, Khalid al-Assad, who gave his life rather than declare to ISIS where some treasures were hidden, and they beheaded him as a result of that. So Syrians have been very committed, literally laid down their lives to try and preserve part of the country's past as much as was possible during these dark years, which are now over. So I think there are opportunities, which is a positive thing, to try and work to restore the sites and to start tracking down looted antiquities. I think there's another big shift, which is that there is a new market for provenanced as well as illegally sourced antiquities, and that is the rich market of the Middle East. I think there used to be quite a widely spread or widely held notion that pre-Islamic articles were in some way blasphemous, which is the ISIS line in a sense. And I think that has now past, and there is far more awareness of the need to preserve and appreciate the pre-Islamic periods, the Hellenistic, the Roman, the Bronze Age, Mesopotamian, etc., going all the way back. And so I think there's far more interest in the artifacts coming out of Syria and Iraq from those who are able to afford them, and in particular the collections which are being created in the Gulf. And I think that's quite a positive development, because rather than sort of flogging what might be quite unique to a tourist in an informal way on the side of a site in Syria, actually having a more serious market, and obviously what we're hoping for here is a legitimate market rather than a black market, which actually enables these artifacts to be preserved, properly looked after, and shared with the public, is a significant and positive change.
And a lot of the value of an artifact isn't actually the item itself, but its history, its knowing where it came from, what time it came from, what context it was found. And that is an awful lot of the damage which follows from the looting, that you have items which, even if they subsequently reemerge legitimately or become legitimated by being seized, you don't necessarily know where they've come from. Where they've been found has been disrupted. The archaeology has been damaged, even if you could put the item back in the place it is. So that understanding of history, which must be part of the value of an item to the legitimate market, is lost.
So that does damage the current legitimate market, absolutely. Do you think, Anwar, that raising awareness of the smuggling and looting that's been happening, do you think that raising awareness has kind of made any changes, and is there anything that we can do?
I think, unfortunately, perhaps two observations. One is that in an environment of civil war, internal displacement, ongoing conflict, the priority is survival for people. And what can be sold in order to enable survival is sold. And so I think the awareness, people may well have had awareness of the value, the irreplaceability of those artifacts coming out of the sites, but the priority was survival. And so I think, in a sense, we need to ensure that awareness goes alongside a prioritization of humanitarian needs, because there has to be a relative degree of stability. There has to be bread in the market. People have to feel safe sending their children to school, getting on a bus, etc., before we can say we need to spend money on looking after ancient sites and artifacts. Otherwise, it's almost akin, in very rough terms, to saying we're prioritizing the dead over the living. And I don't think you'd get much sympathy. So I think there really is a prioritization of the living which needs to take place. And I think that awareness campaigns will always hit this slight obstacle, unfortunately, that it is not a priority to preserve the past when the present is so dangerous, so fragile for so many people. That having been said, I think that there are plans in place to try and create some quite important nationwide schemes in Syria, which, as I was alluding to earlier, may bring some of the potential workforce back into employment and possibly even help with the DDR process, the disarmament, demobilization, reintegration process. There is a certain slowness of pace to archaeological work, even to restitution of damaged sites, that quite naturally gives rise to a meditative, contemplative, therapeutic kind of atmosphere. And so I think for former combatants or from people traumatized by the last terrible years in Syria, actually having a chance to be paid to do something which rebuilds an important part of Syria's national identity, I think could be very, very good for the country. And I think awareness around projects that combine this, addressing the living by looking after the past, is an important way forward. Now, there's an organization called the Jonah Project, which I hope to be associated with going forwards, which is quite serious about this type of work of preservation of the past through creating jobs for people on the ground. So it's led by two men who are both fairly extraordinary. One is an ex-Special Forces soldier and archaeologist who has already been to Syria since Damascus fell to the opposition, was liberated on the 10th of December, and the other by a wonderful writer who spent years in the Foreign Office, who is a real Orientalist in that he speaks exotic languages from Afghanistan to Arabic in the Middle East. And the two of them have established the Jonah Project as the only heritage preservation project actually operating in Syria. And they are aiming to try and address the many issues that we've talked about today. How do we stop the looting? How do we actively start pursuing recovery? And how do we create jobs for the traumatized population, which are useful in preserving Syrian cultural heritage?
And in terms of restitution, that's an interesting one, because times have to change and the situation has to change before restitution can happen sensibly. Is that right? Am I right in thinking that it's a bit of a danger just to send everything back that we discover that has been suspected to be looted from Syria?
Perhaps I'll make two points. I think the first is restitution is always a double-edged sword, because this is where we start getting into the Benin Bronzes type of discussion. Yes, things should be restituted, but then to argue that the Department of Antiquities and Museums is not capable, competent to look after them currently is a way of saying, almost saying, therefore, this Syrian heritage is safer in Western hands. And obviously, that's not an argument that I would make. So there needs to be, I mean, as we just said, Damascus was only freed on the 10th of December. The stability in Syria, the ousting of the 53 years of the Assad regimes, is still very new. The reforming of the Assad era institutions
including cleaning up those who may have been involved in selling Syrian cultural heritage whilst perhaps formally having a job where they were supposed to be preserving it and looking after it, is a process which needs to take place. So, yes, I think there must be restitution, but obviously with conditions. We need to ensure that those jobs are created, that the facilities are there to be able to properly preserve, maintain, and show Syrian heritage to the public, and possibly even to tourists in the years to come. So I think there is important work in restitution which needs to be done. The second element, I would say, is to do with asset tracing. This is Syrian cultural heritage. Some of these objects are enormously valuable. I mean, there's the well-publicized story of the mosaic, which was discovered by the Americans in 2015 in California, which a man had smuggled out of Syria, claiming that it was worth a few thousand dollars. And the Americans valued it at just under $500,000. There are real assets. It's not just people, when they think about assets, they think about money and huge wads and gold bars being taken out of the country. But actually, very rare pieces may have quite significant value and may also have been used as a form of untraceable currency that can be taken out of the country and inserted with a bit of manufactured provenance into the legitimate market in exchange for quite serious amounts of cash. So I think as part of the asset tracing which must take place in Syria for all of the assets looted by the former regime, actually going after cultural artifacts will be important. And to be clear, I think the asset tracing process will take some time to get underway before we can start going over these artifacts. In the first instance, we need to ensure that the current stability in Syria lasts. There are three or four different foreign forces still in Syria. We've got Americans, the Russians, the Israelis, the Turks. The Kurdish areas are still under their own kind of autonomy since the start of the war. We have the former regime areas by the coast. It's still a bit of a patchwork quilt of a country with lots of different actors operating in it. So I think first we need to see a continuation and extension and a deepening of stability in the country. The second thing is we need to ensure that there is a legitimate government in place. The current government is certainly in the process of being legitimized through the extraordinary amounts of recognition that they're getting from governments around the world, from the Americans to our own government. So the ensuring the legitimacy of the government, because if that government's not legitimate, then any body that they create, any entity that they create to try and recover cultural artifacts and other assets that have been stolen, won't be able to go abroad and start looking to freeze, enforce, and go through the process of getting those assets and cultural artifacts back for Syria. So I think there's still some time before this process can start, which in a way is not a bad thing, because I think it enables the work that needs to be done in Syria to prepare for the return of things, to ensure that those who really have the country's best cultural interests at heart are in place, properly trained, well paid to look after, preserve, maintain, and show these artifacts in the museums which used to exist around the country.
Well, I'm so glad, Anwar, that through your involvement with the Jonah Project, perhaps, and through your work with field intelligence, you're involved in this area, because there's obviously a lot of work to do, and it's very good to know that it is being done with such expertise. So what an interesting picture, and we'll be very interested to know how it all develops. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anwar, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Art and Heritage Law Contested Heritage. Please do follow or subscribe on Apple or Spotify podcasts to enjoy more shows.
We have a new podcast out every fortnight. If you're able, please take the time to rate us and put down a review.
The show is also on the 39 Essex Chambers website, along with podcast series on topics such as artificial intelligence, climate change, and planning.